Bonjour, bonjour, bonjour. Welcome to the SBS Cycling Podcast. I'm Christophe Mallet and I'm your host. And joining me is the regular crew, starting with Grace Brown. How are you, Grace?
I'm good. Happy to be back after missing last week.
We kind of missed you.
Yeah, I bet.
We admitted it, yeah? Did we?
Well, yes,
we did.
We talked some big topics. You were let off the hook, actually, by the way, but we won't. It's gone.
It's gone.
It's in the archives. If you want to go back and listen to it, do it.
But
good to have you back.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk. There's one big topic, of course, is the roots of the Tour de France that have been revealed last week. It's the moment of the year where Maka and I are looking at it and going, where are we going to eat along the way? Maybe I'm the only one doing this.
What sort of cheeses are we having? You're working out the cheeses. I'm looking at the wines after work.
Exactly. What I'm putting on my cheese platter. But we're starting with a good Spanish cheese. It has to be Manchego because we started when we started from Barcelona. You know Spain as well very well, Grace. How do you read this tour for 2026? There's a lot happening, a lot that we can dissect into this.
Yeah, well, it looks like the first week is going to be really hard, like going through the Pyrenees and a lot of those, the southern part of France as well. It's not going to be an easy start.
My dad said, a very good comment. He sent me because he thought I didn't see it. No, I'm kidding. True, actually.
But, well, I do that. Yeah. They feel like they're breaking the news to you.
Yeah. That's kind of my bread and butter, but that's okay. He doesn't speak English as well, so that's good. But he sent me this. I thought the comment was quite funny. He said, is there anything else than mountains? It's not bad because it's actually we are crossing every single mountain area of France.
Yeah. But apparently somewhere in there's seven flat sprint stages.
Exactly. Because the word when they were releasing the route was that, we're going crescendo. We're starting not too hard. That's hard for me. Mm. It's not crescendo. Well, it is because the finish at the double Alpe d'Huez is a monster of the monster of the monsters.
Yeah, that is a monster.
So in that sense, but yeah, what do you make of this tour?
Yeah, firstly, I think it's apart from being hard, so I won't go any more into that, but I think it's a beautiful course because we go to some beautiful regions. Mm-hmm. It really is a lovely course. I'm excited by it. And I'll be really honest, a lot of the time I barely look at it, but it's on in another 7-8 months.
I know
time,
you're a bit of a bridge on this.
Well, I wait until the build up and then I start sort of honing in on it. But I had a bit of a good look after it was announced last week, and both the men's and women's, just they excite me because of the places, and this is almost from a selfish point of view that we get to go to as well. They're really beautiful. The women's starts
totally
in Switzerland.
I'm not ashamed. Totally.
Oh, no, they are. They're beautiful spots.
There's less of that sort of dead middle part of France.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's probably the point, I guess, I'm trying to make. Yeah, I think every day has got something that's exciting. Yeah.
So let's look into a bit more details of what we're looking at, because there's start in Barcelona, but it starts with a team time trial, which is again something very special.
But different rules to normal.
So what are the rules and the difference in the rule? Because it's not the same number of where you pick up the winner, I guess.
Yeah, so in the past, it's sort of changed in a team time trial. Occasionally, they take it off maybe the fourth rider, and then I think recently there's been some where it's the third rider. But for this tour next year, they're actually taking the time off the first rider. And there's been criticism from, I think, Plug?
Yeah, yes, yeah? Correct, yes.
From Visma, saying that it's basically a team sprint.
He's never happy, this
but,
come on.
Yeah, I mean, it's still got a decent distance to it. And I think it'll actually be interesting and maybe a bit more tactical.
So 19 kilometres, who can be yellow jersey on this particular event? Because, like you said, it changes the tactics, certainly. So it's not a sprinter. It's not a regular time trial. It's not a prologue. Or it is. Or where do you sit? Where and how important it is to catch that first yellow jersey?
I think the fundamentals will actually stay the same. The more you can keep your entire team together, the faster you'll go towards the end. But it just eliminates a bit of the stress of really keeping the team together. If you've got a rider that's dropping off, you just leave them behind unless they're a GC rider.
Yeah, they did this. So this happened, correct me if I'm wrong, well, it was one of the two. It was the Giro or the Vuelta. It was the same rules. first rider across the line. And so it was all, you know, we would, the discussion point from our point of view was about how the teams would approach it. Would they still try and finish with three strong riders, or would they use up every single rider? And the teams that performed really well effectively were down to one or two at the end. So that was the strategy. And I just can't remember if it was Giro or Vuelta now. My mind's forgotten. But so that's the rules that ASO are adopting, I think is pretty cool.
If I read between the lines, though, like the guys like Pogacar or Vingegaard or even, you know, Remco and so on, they might not be so hungry for the yellow jersey at the beginning. So therefore, there's, 15, 16 other teams that would be even more hungry to make sure they catch that yellow or not.
Well, there'll be the odd team. It's still going to be difficult when you match it up against, yes, you just mentioned Visma, UAE.
Oh, is it important to start strong?
No, it's important to start strong, because if there's a gap of 20 seconds between, and let's just say it for argument's sake, Vingegaard and Pog, because one of them decided they didn't want the yellow jersey on day one.
But one team will go before the other, so one team has an advantage in regulating what they do compared to the other.
Not really.
No?
Not too much, I don't think. You can't take that that risk, can you? You've just got to go for it.
It's not that strategic. It's not like track and field heats where, you know, you see wide variation in the times just to sort of make it across. But I think the teams will still have to race it all out. There's no sort of saving a little bit of energy here or strategically trying to lose it for riders like Pogacar or Vingegaard. But I think those teams, maybe if they come to the line even with two at the finish,
yeah,
they will put another rider forward.
And that's right. That was a thing I was going to say as well. Plus teams that have a plan A and a plan B for the GC, they're not going to get their plan B dropped if he's not, you know, if he's good. They want it. So Pog, UAE will try and have someone with Pog, and so too will Visma, so too will Red Bull and, you know, the other big teams, Ineos, etc.
But can you still have an FDJ or Cofidis or someone that would completely out of the blue
try to win
and try to get that yellow even harder than other teams?
Yeah. I mean, it's potentially a sprint train team. Is there one?
It's 19 kilometres.
One that exists?
It's 19 kilometres.
Yeah, a sprint train team. You know, they have some strong lead out men that are very capable of doing, you know, 19 kilometres.
Alpecin?
Yeah, possibly. Possibly. That's right. Possibly. If they have the right, you got Matthew van der Poel, hopefully Caden Groves, Philipsen, of course. Yeah, potentially a team like that.
Yeah, I tend to not think that it'll go down that path. Like, for a team time trial, you still need riders that have spent time practicing time trial. It's quite different to a sprint lead out, and like the positioning and riding the bike and the lines and everything.
But how would you possibly know this, Grace?
I have no idea. I'm just making it up. Disclaimer.
I'm just like, okay, we'll just shut up.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's just and I love the fact that we are 11 months out or 10 months out and we are already speculating.
And we've just spent 5 minutes on stage.
The riders are right now, I don't know, on a deck chair somewhere enjoying the 2 weeks break or whatever.
People get alive.
And we are here, hey, can they do this? Let's move on. So 3 days in Spain, but the Pyrenees, from what I've read and from what I've seen, they're probably not going to be hit that hard or harder than they were before, because they are at the beginning. So there's not an enormous number of mountain finish in the Pyrenees, but still, it's still going to pinch right at the beginning.
Oh, it's going to hurt. That's right. It'll find out, you know, the old cliche, you can't win the race, but you can lose it in the first week. So that will happen. There'll be riders that come there with big ambitions, and they'll fall apart in the first week. So, yeah, I think I tend to agree. I don't think we'll see. We won't know who's going to win the race in the first week, but there'll be a few eliminated.
Mm-hmm. Along the way, we're going to Pau again and again. Like, Pau is kind of the second base of the Tour de France after the Champs-Élysées, as to be said. Bordeaux. Which is fantastic.
I am.
Yep. Only the second time in my life I'm going to Bordeaux. Remember this? I went to the airport.
What are you excited about in Bordeaux?
Which millennium we get there?
Good restaurants.
We know very good restaurants.
Finish. No, it's good. I mean,
it's also Bordeaux without Cavendish. Like Cavendish in Bordeaux has been such a going together. This year he's not here, so that's going to be Bordeaux without Cavendish.
Yeah, no, it's a big city. It's a city that, you know, it hasn't been in a lot in the 20 odd editions that I've worked on. I think 3 times maybe, and 1 in the last couple of years. So, yeah, it's just cool to go to a city like Bordeaux.
Another one to point out is Le Lion, which is somewhere we've been before. A few years ago, Romain Bardet area. Yep. I think Romain Bardet won a stage there, if I'm not mistaken. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sure people will correct me because I'm probably wrong. But Le Lion is this ski resort. Yes, we've been there.
Right.
I can tell story off mic about of Le Lion. But it's a beautiful ski resort in the middle of France. The importance of having the Massif Central as well. How do you see this presence of the Clermont-Ferrand, all this area that is important, the Cantal, all this, like Uzel, Aurillac, Le Lorient, they're quite important.
I mean, I don't know about you, Grace. I love the Massif Central. Again, it goes back to what I said. We go to some beautiful parts of the country, the most beautiful parts, which, you know, surprise, surprise, ASO always try and do that. So, yeah, it's important. We've seen some amazing stages there. They're not the biggest mountains, we know that, but it is a beautiful park, Clermont. Hopefully I can get some frequent flyer points with my hotels.
It has to be
the amount of days I've slept.
You might not know this, but is it last year or 2 years ago? You spent like 10 days?
Like 12 nights. 12 nights. That includes the men's and the women's start, obviously. But, there.
12 nights out of what, 30?
Yeah.
So half your tour, was it?
I was a local. I was a local. They gave me the keys to the town, the whole works.
Okay, fast forward the way we're heading. We're heading the Vosges or Belfort, Le Marquestein. It's beautiful.
This is what's amazing.
Yeah.
We start in Barcelona and then, you know, a week later or something, we're up in the Vosges.
Yes.
Like, beautiful. Mm. Absolutely stunning.
And that's an actual stunning area.
Yeah.
It's very famous for this soup. They do chicken soup with the top, if you remember
chicken
this.
Chicken soup?
It's not just chicken soup. Is it like a pastry top?
It's a pastry top. Like, it's all puffed up.
Well, it's basically a pie.
It's not, because
chicken
it's still
pie.
A soup.
So it's really like
it's actually liquid underneath. It's in a ceramic pot, and then you've got this sort of pastry on top.
Oh, you peel the pastry off and then it's a
Yeah,
soup.
We've had that a few times. It was delicious. Okay. You don't remember these things.
I
visibly remember too much, but that's okay. Heading back into the Alps are going to be there, and they will be also very prevalent in every tour. But a key point here towards the end is Alpe d'Huez. So they're doing Alpe d'Huez twice, basically.
Over 2 days.
Over 2 days.
Correct, yeah.
So,
and different sides.
Second summit finish with a finish with a side that they'd never taken. So
This is the, I think the, is it the Col de Sarenne side?
I can't remember. It's one side that they haven't taken ever in history.
I think that's possibly the case.
It's like a little mountain road.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's
how monstrous is it to have Alpe d'Huez twice? And how do you prepare for this? When you know it's Alpe d'Huez twice, but on the last 2 days of the tour before, not so much of a procession again in Paris, we'll talk about this, but having them at the very, very back end of the tour.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal, but... And then I've seen comments that, you know, they're trying to design the course so that it's decided in the last 2 days. But having seen Tadej Pogacar over the last few years, it's just going to these stages, it'll just cement him winning.
Bit by bit?
Yeah. I mean, if he's in the same form that he was this past year and the competition doesn't improve, then...
Because I think it's someone from Lotto that said that it's really a tour where even if you are 4 or 5 minutes ahead on GC, coming to the last climb in the Alpe d'Huez, you can lose all this in that last stage. Yes, it's true on paper. Probably unlikely we will see this in real life, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, you can live and hope that the tables turn on the last day, but I think it's more likely that it'll be pretty stable.
Mm-hmm. Alpe d'Huez is somewhere you particularly like and love.
I do. It's I always when we talk about the iconic tour climbs, because what probably a lot of people don't realise too much, outside of the Tour de France, there's barely a race up Alpe d'Huez.
Yes, absolutely.
It's generally in the Tour de France, whether it be the men's or the women's. So I call Alpe d'Huez the Hollywood climb, and then the majestic mountain, and there's a few, but, or the mythical one is Mont Ventoux, And then, of course, Galibier, you know, they're the big sort of giant mountains that they go up. But Alpe d'Huez is a Hollywood climb, you mm-hmm. know, with its so many switchbacks. It's, you know, it's incredible. But I've just, while you guys were chatting, I just had a quick look. So the stage start, this is the penultimate day of the race, starts in Le Bourg d'Oisans,
yes,
which is at the base, which is normally the traditional side that they come up. They go around the back, and I was right, they go up Col des Sirenes, mm-hmm. which is the small little mountain goat road. They've raced up it before, but they didn't have a finish.
Yes,
they didn't
correct.
Finish it up to as yeah, they kept going.
Correct.
So, and they go up Col de Galibier. This is the penultimate
yes.
day. They
mm-hmm.
go up Col de Galibier as well, and they go up the Croix de Feu.
Because it's not just the finish. That last day. That's
it's
last,
epic.
It's not the last day.
It's the stage 20.
Yeah. It's epic.
It is absolutely epic. Mm. And it's when I say only, it's 170 kilometres.
Yeah.
So to squeeze
and how
in,
many metres of elevation?
5,000.
It's massive. It'll be, no,
over
it hasn't 5, got it 000. Here. It'll be up there.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'll be 4,000 to 5,000. So, yeah, I tend to agree with you. Is it too much? Is it too hard?
Is it too hard for a finish? Is it, what damage yeah. can this do at the back end of the peloton? You're a sprinter. You have hopes on the next day in Paris, and we'll talk about the stage in Paris as well in a sec. But you may still have a bit of hope because you're feeling good, but you got this bit of a beast before you.
Yeah, if you're not a climber in the peloton, like you're just looking at these last 2 days and thinking, well, I mean, for a lot of them, if yeah. you're not going after the green jersey, then some of the riders would just be like, well, what's the point?
So they'll be racing for time cut.
Yeah.
This is where they'd be racing at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, therefore, the stage might be less interesting to watch.
Well, if times are locked close going into that stage, then we're in for a ripper.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
If there's a four-minute gap between first and second already, then it's going to be a bit of a, not a novelty, not a procession, I should say, but, you know, a foregone conclusion.
Yeah.
So, it could go... It's going to go one of two ways, which is stating the obvious. But, yeah, it's either going to be foregone conclusion or we will all be chomping at the bit at the top saying, wow, what a finale we're going to have.
And we want to be excited about this. And then before we turn to the Tour de France Femmes avec Zwift, there's one last stage in Paris. Montmartre is back, rightly so, because you don't want to do it 1 year and then not do it the next year. It goes for a lot of different things.
Really?
Including Montmartre, absolutely. As a spectator, I'll put my foot down on this one. I'm happy Montmartre is back. You know?
No, I think it's good. But I do feel for the sprinters that...
But they changed a little bit of the route, because before, the last climb of Rue Le Pic was 6 kilometers to the end. Now it's going to be 9 or 10. So they're doing another detour
and
allowing maybe regroups.
And can I ask, this is a question, it's half question, half statement. Are they only going up at once?
No, three times.
Okay, so they're doing the same amount of times.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if it's the same amount of time. I can't remember.
Okay.
There's so much racing that has happened since.
Yes.
But I know they're doing it more than once.
I think
from top of my head it's three times.
Okay.
But they also, they are, like the ending of the last climb is going to be now 10K from the finish and not 5K or 6K like it was.
Look, the rain changed it. The rain changed everything too, which it very rarely rains.
True.
So
in Paris,
remember the peloton have just done 2 Alpe d'Huez.
Yes, exactly.
Before coming to Montmartre, like the sprinters will have absolutely no punch in their legs left, and
so you're today someone like Philipsen or Caden Groves or someone that is that caliber of sprinter. How do you gear your mindset towards? Yeah, I think I can win in Paris. Well, when do you switch? I'm not saying today, but when do you switch and say, how good do I have to feel on the night or the transfer from Alpe d'Huez to Thoiry, where the last stage starts? How good do you have to feel to have a crack at that win, realistically?
Yeah, well, I think no one is going to be feeling good, so you just have to have a crack anyway and find out on the day. But I would lean towards this being more of like a puncher sort of stage, like a classic style rider, rather than a pure sprinter.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And one last fact for people that don't know France, Thoiry is on the suburb of Paris. It's also the seat, the set for a incredible natural reserve where they've got animals. Some call it a zoo, but it's not a zoo. It's not like a zoo enclosed. It's a really big encounter. And as a, I think what I believe is the biggest kangaroo enclosure in France.
So seriously?
Yeah, yeah. There's a natural park of Thouars. Yeah. Just as a fact, I'm just saying, if you want to film a feature in Thouars.
Maybe we'll do our opening, yeah. our opening.
You're not doing a barbecue there.
Segment
I see you coming.
Yes, yes. Maybe.
Kangaroo sausages.
Right, let's go now to the Tour de France Femme avec Zwift, because this one is also a fantastic route. And Grace, I want to take your opinion on this one. They are ticking all the big iconic mountains that Maka just mentioned, one by one by one in the Tour, and this year is Mont Ventoux. How excited would you have been as a rider to think about climbing something like Mont Ventoux?
Yeah, I think, as you say, it's like a mythical climb, just that sort of moonscape on the top and the towers is something really cool. The women have raced up there in some other races, like there's actually a Mont Ventoux
challenge
yes. or one day race, yeah. And I think there's some tour that's been up there as well.
Okay,
but to have it in the Tour de France Femme avec Zwift is really cool, and I think it was sort of expected. Like,
yes,
it was going to happen.
I think riders, correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of the riders, I think Maka can justify this as well, they were talking about Mont Ventoux before the route was released without knowing it was going to be, but sort of knowing it was going to
be. Well, we caught up with Sarah Gigante last week, didn't we, on the eve of, and she mentioned to me Ventoux. She didn't know, obviously, that it was obviously.
How did she feel about it? Without putting words
the more,
in her
more
mouth,
mountains, the better, she said. Pretty much, in a nutshell, the hillier the better. Mm-hmm. So, arguably she was the second best climber.
Yes.
In the race this year.
So the problem for her in this Tour de France is it doesn't finish on top of Mont Ventoux. It does finish in Nice with 2 days and a time trial at
Nice
trial
might not be so nice.
There's a time trial on the way, and then there's
Dijon.
Nice. And then the finish in Nice is fairly, flat at all?
No.
It's not flat at all.
Very hilly. Okay. I think they, on the final stage, they do four ascents of, I forget the name of the climb.
Oh, yep.
Yeah, but it's...
Yep.
That one on the left.
It's about a 7 kilometre climb.
Yes.
That they do laps of, and I think quite technical descent.
Okay.
It's not the same climb, is it, in the men's Paris-Nice on that final stage, potentially? I wonder.
Potentially.
If it is, it's brutal. It's steep. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's 7 kilometres, though.
Right.
So it could be a different one. Yeah.
So it's a very difficult finish in Nice. Mm-hmm. But I also, I'm keen to see the return of a time trial.
Yes. How important is this? Because that's clearly that's probably not going to play in favour of Pauline Ferrand-Prévot. That's something she needs to improve very well. Is that a very good redistribution of the cards for the dominance we had last year?
Yeah, I like it because not all the GC contenders are good time trialists. Mm-hmm. I think you see... In the men, like Tadej Pogacar and Jonas Vingegaard, really, really decent time trialists. But of the women GC contenders, Demi is good. If Marlon Rusa goes for GC, she's obviously very good. But Pauline, we've not seen her do a time trial for a very long time. I don't think she was good at them when she was road racing back in the day. And Cassie and Nuadoma's.
But that's a bit of
an
Achilles heel.
Yeah, in a way, though, and I'll be the devil's advocate here, the time trial is on day 4 and Mont Ventoux is on day 7. So does that mean someone like Pauline, someone like Cassia can actually limit the losses on the time trial? This is the target, not to win it, but to really limit it and go for redemption on something like Ventoux, which is... arguably hard as a time trial for other riders.
I think, Pauline can probably make up that deficit, but someone like Cassio is really going to struggle to come back from, even if you lose 20 seconds in the time trial, it could mean that you're not winning, especially when, the women's tour is only a week long, 9 days.
Yeah.
So you can't lose time anywhere, really.
Okay.
But okay.
It's, yeah. Yeah, it's when you, and when you look at it, you know, stage one is 137, yeah. Stage two, 149, stage three,
and 157. And actually, he goes into, and just jumping on this, we mentioned the fact that we knew it was going to start in Switzerland.
Yeah.
And we thought it was going to be, oh, it could be hilly straight away. They kept it fairly flat for the first 3 days.
So around Lake
the,
Geneva.
Around the lake. I think the first, at least 2 days, they're not monstrous.
You can do it. It's the only way, because I've lived in Lausanne, is the only flat roads are on around Lake Geneva,
mm-hmm.
which obviously it sits and where the race starts, obviously. So they've done well, but tired legs, you know, the accumulation effect into day four and 21 kilometres, it's not long, but it's not short.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, yeah. you know, it's, there can be some big gaps, can't there, after 4 days of racing.
Yeah, it's solid. Mm. And I think overall the elevation is higher than last year, like the cumulative meters climbed. So the women's Tour de France femme just keeps getting harder and harder.
Absolutely.
I think.
You probably understood it from the tone of our voice. We're fairly excited about the Tour de France. Or I am anyway.
Also, like, nice compact map.
Yes.
Not long transfers. Yeah.
That's the one we want, because on the men's side, there's there's one shocking transfer, the last one from the bottom of France to the up to Paris. I don't know how we're going to split that driving, Maka.
I'm TGV. Not
sure. I hope it's a train job.
Grenoble, TGV.
So Maka is the master of logistics.
Well, we've done it before, actually. So actually,
Grenoble, you actually woke me into the station when I missed my train. And
that was this year.
That was last year. Yeah. Tour de France Femme.
Yeah, yeah.
He actually ushered me into my train.
Members access Grenoble. Yeah.
And I have to say this, sorry. Thanks to you, I got my train, because I missed it in Grenoble, and we went like 20-30 kilometers.
We went to Chambéry.
Yeah, we went to Chambéry. Yeah. We went further down, and I had like a minute 30 to spare, and Maka just ushered me.
A Frenchman in his home country needed an Australian to get him sorted.
He actually ushered me into the station. Quick hug. See you. Bye.
Even time for a hug.
Plenty of time.
But actually, just a little snippet. Yeah, the last time we did catch the TGV, I believe, was when the great man himself, Cadel Evans, secured the overall victory in Grenoble individual time trial.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the final stage was in
2011.
Into Paris. Yeah, so,
absolutely. That would be a very interesting. That's hopefully it's an omen. Okay, we take a short break, and then when we come back, we talk about all the rest, because there are other news in cycling. Don't go away. Welcome back to the second part of the SBS Cycling Podcast. Now, Maka, I know you have a list of different things that we can talk about, because even though we are late in October, and by the way, this is the last of our weekly podcast. We go back into a summer season of bi-monthly or fortnightly podcast from now. But there's still a fair bit of news happening towards the end of this season.
There is. Do we want the good or the bad?
Let's start with good.
What do we want?
No, good vibe.
The good?
Let's talk with. About the Track World Championship.
Yes, great.
Some good vibes.
Yes. Okay, I'll lead off with one, if I may. This is an amazing story, and it's just deserves a huge round of applause and a mention, of course. Christine Perkins, she won a bronze medal in the team sprint in Mallorca with Anna Mears 18 years ago. She's just won her second bronze medal in Santiago in the team sprint 18 years later.
That's enormous.
That is massive. She's, of course, the wife of Shane Perkins,
yes.
who is a great track cyclist himself. I believe he's now a coach with WA. So he's sort of got into that fold. But that's huge.
Mm.
Christine Perkins, if you're listening, well done. That is massive. She's become a mum in those years. She's retired. She was a bodybuilder.
Yes.
And she's come back to track cycling.
Husband became Russian as well at some point.
Shane, I think competed for Russia.
Yeah, he competed for Russia at some point.
That all got a bit sort of waters got murky.
Yeah, he got a Russian passport to compete somewhere. A story here.
Yeah. It's not about Shane.
No, it's about Christine. And then the second one, Grace, I'll let you.
Elia Viviani, retired in style, winning the elimination race.
That's fantastic.
So, world champion in retirement. Not bad, is it?
Yeah. No. Well, we don't know what it's like.
How does that feel? Yes.
We don't know. So
how may you feel?
It's almost like rubbing it in a bit, isn't it?
I really enjoyed seeing that news. I think he's a really, really well liked rider in the peloton. Especially amongst the Italians, I speak them here very fondly of him, and you could see just the whole Italian team get around him with that win and a lot of love for that.
How important is that win for him, though? Because he seemed that on the road, he literally ran out of the road with teams. He could not find the next move, and that's sort of what probably geared towards his retirement. Important to have that last medal to put over the mantelpiece?
Yeah, I think it means a lot to him. And you could see that he was very emotional about it. And just being able to tie off a successful career in a really positive way, I think is, you know, not many riders get to do that. Mm-hmm. And now he can go into the next phase of his life being super proud and having no resentment for anything.
Yeah, and also, as we know, you can't just step off the road and get on the track. And as much as he has a track background as well, you still have to put the prep in. So it shows how committed he was right till the very end. And you're right, Grace. To be now, he'll feel like it's on his terms. And it is. It was on his terms anyway. But it's validation that he says, "Okay, I can now go out on top."
Yeah.
You know, so that's cool.
And the elimination race is not an easy one to win.
Oh, they're brutal. They're tough. And tactically, physically, everything. Yeah.
Anything else on your list, Micah? I know you have plenty on
your list. There's a few. I'll save some little snippets for the very end, but I think we've got to come back home for a second.
Mm-hmm.
This has just happened. Dirty Warnie.
Yes.
Cancelled. Giro della Donna. Cancelled. We talked about that other race being cancelled last week. What is going on? And by the way, Dirty Warnie was meant to be in the next 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks' notice they've given all of the people who have entered.
What is going on? That is rough.
That's pretty rough.
Yeah, what do we know? It just feels like a bit of a bad omen for Aussie cycling at the moment and events. Like it's really hard to get an event off the ground, and the money involved, the security, just shutting down the roads. Even though Dirty Warnie, I don't think they need to shut down as much of the traffic or anything because it's on the gravel, but it's hard yakka.
It's events are hard yakka.
Because at the end, you can't really run an event and losing money. You still have to at least break even.
Yes.
At the very least. And it's not an objective to break even. Events will want to make money and grow.
Of course, they're a commercial.
Who doesn't? So,
yeah.
So is it a symbol of how the world of cycling is? Or do you think there's a bit going on here in Australia where it's a bit harder?
There's a number of things going on.
It's a genuine open question.
Yeah, no, and that's right. And it's very easy to sit here and have a strong opinion. And I don't know all of the doings of here.
Mm-hmm.
It does cost a lot of money. We know that. Costs a lot of people power. But 2 weeks out.
Yes.
When a couple of weeks prior to that, they were still promoting entries, etc. So to me, there needs to be some questions asked to the organising group. It's organising group, by the way.
I'm sure money would be refunded and no one will fund
They're already promoting next year's event, whereas I think they actually need to address why they've cancelled. They need to give specific reasons.
Yeah,
And I think as a governing body in this country, Oz Cycling should be standing up here and asking these questions and making sure the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed.
Yeah.
I think that's not, this isn't a criticism.
Mm-hmm.
This is just...
Is it a lack of professionalism, though? Like things have been missed?
Well, we don't know. We don't know, do we? We don't know. Mm-hmm. But all I know is, and I've worked in events. When I retired, and my wife, Susan, comes from an events background. So just echoing again what you said, Grace, it is hard, and it is hard to make a dollar as an event promoter.
Yeah.
So I really, take pity with people, and I tip my hat to private individuals or companies who are trying to put on events. It is really hard work.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen it. I think we've all seen it. If you go to an event, the people who work on the events, But if we're going to put an event, we've got to do it properly.
Yeah.
And we've got to make sure our T's are dotted and our I's are crossed.
Yeah, and I think, like, given that they've cancelled it so close to the event, it can't be a funding issue. Like, they would have had to have the money there.
Well, you would have hoped so. Yeah. That's right.
It's a bit late 2 weeks out to realise, we can't actually pull this off. So, there's something else happening there.
Okay, well, I'm sure we'll keep you updated if we have any more news. While we're down there in the pessimistic field of cycling...
Well, it's not pessimistic. We're giving the facts,
But there's one here that is actually... Fedor, is an article I read on Cycling News. The initial registration for Jayco Alula and Leave Alula Jayco are reportedly due to absence of bank guarantee. So, they haven't signed in, both teams, yet for... a license or paid their license. Explain to me what does that mean.
Well, and I'm not handballing, but
I can feel the ball coming towards me.
It's not a rookie of the bowling ball, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. So all teams, UCI teams, registered at the World Tour, Pro Team or Continental level need to pay a bank guarantee. Yeah. The amount of money sort of is smaller at the lower tiers, but it's quite substantial for the World Tour. And it's basically a guarantee that that either the Federation or the UCI will hold. And if something happens with the team, like they, for some reason, can't continue paying the riders or any other debts that they have, then the bank guarantee is called upon to repay. So it's sort of like a security that the team's secure and can go ahead. So it's crucial that Jayco Alula have this money to put forward. Otherwise, they might find themselves in strife halfway
through. So a couple of questions on that, because I'm going back to my days and I know things have changed. We had bank guarantees in place. It was a quarter of, I think, the salaries back when I was racing. Mm. Is it? So how much is it? And my understanding, and this is again, it's a question, I would have thought it just rolls over. Like the bank guarantee is sitting there. It doesn't come out each year. If the team continues, the bank guarantee rolls over. So what
Just to put a clarification here, it's at 25%, which basically it's an estimated 3 to 4 million euros here.
Yeah, okay. So, because obviously the numbers each team varies because they have different wages, budgets.
Yeah, that's a good point, Maka. You would think that it's a bit like a rental bond or something.
That's what I thought it was. But obviously there's a bit more to this.
Yeah, and I guess like the budget of the team changes from year to year, so that amount needs to be adjusted.
Yep.
But...
What are the risks for the team, though? Like, can they be prevented from riding?
Absolutely.
If
this is true, then absolutely.
Yeah, like the UCI would be making a massive, massive exemption if they let them register without a bank guarantee, and it's not fair on the riders if they do that. Yeah, but basically. I think I saw that the riders from Jayco Alula have been given permission to look elsewhere for contracts.
That's not a good sign.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
That's not a good sign.
So we'll watch this space. It's so late in the season and most teams are full. I'm not sure if this applies to both the women's and the men's team. It feels like the attention's been on the men's, but I would assume that the same...
The women... More so, I've noticed. They've been signing riders, the women's team.
Definitely the development team. I think, like, the Conti level team might be...
So, again we're basing our reasoning on articles that we read. We haven't heard from the team. We don't know from the official line. And by all means, if anyone at Jayco Alula is happy to talk about it, the telephone line is open for us.
We'll do a special edition podcast next
100%.
Week. 100%.
Yes. let's hope, you know.
Let's hope there's nothing else than just...
No, that's right. And Jerry Ryan's been amazing.
A non-alignment in calendars
to our sport. Yeah. So, I hope... Yeah, I think we all hope, obviously, it continues on for at least another 12 months.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, any other good news? We can't finish on this. We have to have at least one good news on
Well, it's not so much good news, but it's more one of the stars of the sport, Binyam Girmay. We know talk of Intermarché merging with Lotto.
With Intermarché becoming the sponsor of the Lotto team. That's what the talk is.
Okay, right. So some riders have left, some riders have been released.
Yep.
And then there's also talk about Gourmet basically waiting. It's a November 1 deadline of this merger. And if it does or doesn't go ahead, he may end up going to the team of Israel. They're still called Israel at the moment. They won't be called that in 2026. But that's a big question mark about one of the stars of the sport, where he will end up next year.
Surely he will find somewhere. Like he's a rider that will find somewhere.
Yeah, he will. I
think it's probably more of him making up his mind where he wants to go rather than not having options.
And the talk early days when he first started to come to some prominence, before he even won his big events, he signed a 5-year contract with Intermarché. And at that time, we all knew, everyone knows, they are one of the smaller budget teams. So we all said, we don't know, but they got him for a steal.
Mm-hmm.
He's world class. He's since gone on to win the green jersey, multiple stages of the Tour, Giro, stage win, etc. I guarantee you he's worth more than probably what he's getting paid. So I just hope that he's got a good manager that can negotiate.
It's probably
upwards.
Time for cashing. Like,
that's right. This is why
the move for Lotto might not be the good one for him. He needs to emancipate and go somewhere else.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Anything good at the end?
I did see some. I mean, it's neutral news. Maybe you like this news, but the Vuelta start in Monaco.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
I saw this. Yeah, that was quite interesting, actually, to see the Prince Albert on his bike and promoting the whole Vuelta. But there's this trend of the Vuelta starting really far away from their base, in a way.
Yes.
They started in different places.
That's true.
Netherlands,
they started everywhere.
But Monaco's not too far. And I've heard that it's going to be the F1 track.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. That would
be nice. So a prologue.
Oh, would it be nice?
Maybe a prologue or a time trial.
Tour de France had that years ago. I remember.
On the F1 track?
Yep, they did. Part of it was on part of the F1 track. Yeah. It was a prologue to start off, so maybe similar
there we go.
Start.
That's a good news.
There you go. That's good news. That's exciting.
Yay.
Exactly. Thank you for joining us. And then, of course, as we said, this is the last of our weekly podcast. But don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. We will be here every fortnight with insight and interviews as well, and probably the tiny bits of information that are still happening during the off season. Thank you, you two. It's been a wonderful season, actually.
It has.
I enjoyed your presence, Grace. And I hope you're okay to come back next year and carry on working with us.
Yeah.
It's been fun so far.
I'll grace you with my presence again.
Good. Thank you. And then this is the end of this podcast. Until then, it's bye for now.